Enjoy food the way nature intended. Alaska Seafood, wild, natural, and sustainable. For more information, visit wildalaskaseafood.com.
Hello and welcome to Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday from, I don't know, like, you know, like 12:15 to like, you know, 12:45, like 1, you know, from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Joined as usual with Nastasia the Hammer Lopez.
Hi.
And we got Dave in the booth. How you doing?
Good. Things are getting off to a tense start.
And it's because Nastasia's all mad at me. We'll talk about that in a minute. We also have my bar partner and evil cocktail overlord, Don Lee.
Secret.
Secret overlord?
Secret overlord.
But official partner now.
Official partner. We can talk about that now.
Secret overlord. Yeah. So call in your questions to 718-497-2128. That's 718-497-2128. Nastasia said to me this morning, first of all, she's mad at me because we have colliding email. I have colliding meetings. Don and I need to go get some actual.
Don't worry, I canceled the one I won. We're all good.
Don and I need to get some actual, like, you know, building crap work done in advance of us opening the new bar, existing conditions, because, you know, we're members. Actually, Booker and Dax is a member of New Lab, which Nastasia, by the way, New Lab, a collaborative. I hate collaborations more than almost anything is collaborating with random people. But this is kind of a collaborative workspace, right, Don?
The story checks out.
Yeah. And so, Don and I are members of it for the shops. Like, you know, they have a shop bot I can use. They have a larger laser cutter than Don owns. They have 3D printers that I don't own. So, like, between all of this, you know, they have a spray painting booth. They have a vinyl cutter. All this kind of stuff that you would, a full wood shop. Yeah. You know, stuff that we would want to be able to access here in New York, but can't because New York's not a reasonable place to do anything. You know what I mean? New York City is the worst place to actually make or do anything. It is a freaking horror nightmare. And I've known this since I stupidly moved to New York City to become a sculpture guy. There's no worse job on earth than being an unsuccessful large metal sculptor in New York City. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, that's what I came to grad school to do here, but it's hard to move stuff around. Long story short, we're part of this collaborative space. But other people I've asked about it have said, well, I didn't really join for the shops, I joined for the community.
There's a lot of lonely people out there, you know?
But who the hell wants community?
People don't have families.
Really?
Friends, probably. Families.
Yeah. Do you
what do you have
want
against community?
What I have I like the people at New Lab. They're very nice. I like all the people at New Lab. This is not an indicative of New Lab per se, but I think all of these things are like they're faux-munities. They're not real communities. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, I have enough trouble keeping in touch with my actual friends, family, and coworkers. Like, I'm going to have
That's a you problem.
Yeah.
I mean, people actually like to spend...
That's a YP.
That's an MP?
No, it's a YP.
If I'm saying it...
If you're saying it, it's an MP.
Yeah. All right. So you're saying people... That's why people enjoy the social media.
Well, it's... as people have gone more and more into like a distributed workplace where they're not really working from an office with coworkers, they get lonely. They want to work with other people. They want to be around other folks, other like-minded people. So It's the rise of co-working spaces like WeWork, and the New Lab is just another version of that where it's a little bit more focused and it has all these shops as, you know, the reason why we're there.
Nastasia, can you imagine actually having to sit next to like-minded people every day to you and to me?
Like, no.
Would that be the worst
It'd
thing
be
ever?
The worst.
It'd be horrible. Be
yeah, we're already pushing the limits here.
Yes.
It's true.
Yeah. I mean, even Nastasia and I are like, oil and water isn't right. It's more like water and sodium.
That's not true. Because we are very similar.
No.
Yes. Yes.
I was thinking more like water and naphtha burning on top of the water.
Yeah, which one of us is the naphtha?
Water and lye.
We all know who the naphtha is.
Oh! Anyway, we'll let the listeners choose for themselves who gets to be the naphtha in this scenario. But the truth of the matter is that Nastasia enjoys nothing more than getting me virulently angry. There is, like, it basically seems to me that she has chopped a good 5 or 6 years off of my life just for her own humor. Like, just, like, in order for her to, like, crack a smile, She will do anything to make my blood boil. Say that something is broken.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, like the last time you saw me.
No, that was back at the FCI.
You still do that all the time. You'll say bad things have happened. I see you do it to other people, too.
No.
And the great thing about Nastassia is she gets you to co-sign on doing this to other people. So she also makes you into a worse person. That's the best thing I think about Nastassia. She has the ability, when they go low, she'll make you go lower.
She brings out the worst in all of us.
Yeah. She has this ability to sink you down to your base level. Like if you want to know what your low level of operation is, she'll take you right there. Like right there.
She'll take you there.
Yeah. Oh my God. She'll take you there. Anyway, we're going to have to pay some ASCAP fees. Speaking of which, Don and I are, dealing with, Don has decided, first of all, I never realized what a pain in the butt it is to go full legit on the music you play. Are you guys legit, Nastassia, at the Flyer of Pasta?
No.
No?
Shouldn't admit that on the air.
No, listen, but just so you know, this is what's irritating me, right? So as I'm sure any of you that have actually researched this know, you cannot, and Dave, as a musical dude, as a sound engineer, as whichever one of your hats you wish to wear here, mm-hmm. that we cannot simply just play music, even if you, quote unquote, own said music. You can't do it, right?
Well, if you owned it, it would be no problem.
Well, right. I mean, own your copy of it is what I'm saying.
You own the copy that you can play for personal consumption.
Personal consumption.
Right. But I thought you meant own the copyright to it.
No.
Yeah, difference there.
No, but here's the nightmare, right? So the problem is that you own these CDs, you bought them, or CDs, what the hell am I? You own the MP3 or whatever.
CDs.
You own the vinyl. You have you have the wax cylinders. You own the wax cylinders. No, like whatever technology you're using to get your music, you own those, does not give you the right to play them in public, except you can play radio. You can play anything that you own a copy of for your workers as long as guests and customers can't hear it, right? That's one. You're allowed to do that. That's not public. Two, you're allowed to play radio and or television if your bar is under, 3,500 square feet. And if you have fewer than, I forget what the number is, 5 or 6 TVs, you're allowed to play broadcast TV and broadcast radio. However... That's it. Those are the only things. If you own a jukebox, you can buy a single jukebox license from a company that does that for jukeboxes. If you want to play music, you are hosed. You need to, if you want to do it legitimately, you have to buy not one, not two, 3 separate licenses to cover almost everything. You have to buy your ASCAP. You have to buy your BMI. And what's the other one, Dave? CCAP? What's it called?
I don't think it's CCAP.
Something like that, though. It's the third one.
Well,
that's the thing.
Those are the two biggest, though, BMI and ASCAP.
But you have to get the third one because, in any given song, there could be, part of the rights could be owned by BMI because, this songwriter is with BMI, this one's with ASCAP, this one's with the third one that starts with an S.
It's a big, convoluted mess, all copyright law.
So you have to, in the real life, you have to buy all 3. But you can't buy all 3 from one person. You can't, walk up to one guy and be like, hey, Vinny, I want to get 3 licenses, for the whole thing. He's like, hey, okay. And then he bundles it.
Take a walk around the corner and my guy will see about you.
Come back. I'll give it. We'll laminate it. Anyway, but you can't do that, right? And literally, if you're a big enough player or if for some reason you get under somebody's skin, someone like BMI will go. And let's say you have an ASCAP license. Someone from BMI will show up at your bar. They will, soak up your booze and customer service on BMI's nickel, and then they'll listen to all the songs, and they'll wait for you to play a song that is not, from BMI. It's, that's not from ASCAP, it's BMI. And it's, get this, $750 plus lawyer's fees per song that you play.
That's good.
Maximum, right? You like that, Nastassia? So the fact of the matter is you have to play all 3. So I went on the website this morning. I went on ASCAP. And I'm like, how much is it going to cost me, ASCAP? I just went to ASCAP. I didn't bother with the other two yet. And they were like, well, tell me a little bit about your something first before we, how big are you? What's your name? Where are you? What's your address? You know what I mean? Like, they really want to know a bunch of information before they even give you the price,
because
right?
Because if you're in New York City, it's going to be like
that. Well, right? I mean, look, a lot of it has to do with your square footage. They want to know how big you're... They really don't care the square footage. They want to know how many seats you have, how many nights a week you're going to play music. They want to know what kind of establishment you are. And they also want to... The big things, are you going to have live music? Because here's the kicker. If you hire a musician to come in and play at your bar... Unless they own all of the rights to everything they are playing, you have to pay a much higher licensing fee for that music. So,
in order for them to play covers, for example?
Covers or their own songs that they don't own all of the publishing
right,
to.
Right,
right. So it's, and that's a much higher fee. So if you're a no live music venue and, you know, you're looking at somewhere on the order of between $500 and $1,500 per license per year, in that range. For non-live music, depending on the size of your establishment and how many hours a week you're open and how many people are going to go to it, right? So that's, let's say it's 15, 15, 15. That's $4,500 a year. There is still a possibility that you could get sued by somebody else, but pretty much you're totally covered at that point. Now, the other way you can get around this, this is for people who are actually going to try to go legit with their music. For some reason, I went down this rabbit hole. I was just going to Wild West it like they do at some other places. I will not mention who they are, but some other places where I used to have worked and or maybe been, you know, involved with that play music in the Wild West style. The Wild West style, first of all, you should never stream music at your location illegally.
Is satellite radio considered?
There
That's
are two
radio.
Well, no,
radio.
But you're not allowed to play. If you're under a certain size, so you can play radio at Pasta Flyer.
But it's satellite radio, like Sirius.
No. You're not allowed to. Specifically, no. You're not allowed to play satellite radio. You can buy commercial satellite radio where you are allowed to, and it's not that much more, but it's just you can only play from those channels. Now, here's the deal. So Spotify now, there's a bunch of these businesses. Spotify is one of them where they're like, hey, Spotify for business, okay. Right? And so you can have, in quotes, access to the entire Spotify song list, right, at your business. But the dildilio on it is, and you can even, get this, Dave, you can upload your own playlist to it, right?
As long as it's more than 3 hours.
As long as it's more than 3 hours, because why, Don?
Because they're doing a music license under radio, like Pandora. So they shuffle the songs, and you don't get to pick the actual play order, nor can you inject the song midstream. You have to just get the shuffle version.
And that
sucks. Well, that sounds stupid.
Right, Dave, right? That sucks. And it's such a stupid workaround because they're letting you pick 3 hours of very specific songs, right? You know, I could play, you know, like, if I want to go like Too Short, Mac Dre, like Loonies, and then I want to go down, you know, further south in California, and then I want to scoot down to like, you know, Texas, you know, choose your Texas, choose a Texas rapper. I don't know. Pick one. Paul Wall. I don't know why I chose that one. And then, like, go over to, like, Atlanta and then, like, go up. You know what I mean? You can't because you can't choose the freaking order. It's just going to rando shuffle it. But it lets you choose those songs, but it doesn't let you choose the order. This is so stupid. Right, Dave?
Yep.
Yeah. And we tested this because Don and I... Now, it's real cheap.
You don't have to convince me, Dave.
It's real cheap. It's like $25 a month or $26. Between $17 and $30 a month, depending on how you sign up and when you sign up. Blah, 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 blah. But like...
So is this what you're running into with Booker and Dax right now? Is this what you're trying to say?
Well, it's not the new Booker and Dax. It's existing conditions.
Excuse me. Sorry.
Come on, man. Get with the freaking program.
Existing conditions.
Come on. Yeah, this is what we're running into. And as for Don doesn't care that much about shuffle or not shuffle. That's not the... As they say en français, the hill that he wants to die on. You know what I mean? But like
many hills I want to die on, not this one.
Yeah. But like,
there's some nice ones around here.
Yeah. Oh my God! We'll get into that later. This neighborhood, Dave, is a trash pit. Right. I hate this place.
Stay on target.
You try to park in this place? You ever try to park here?
No, I don't drive.
I don't drive. They took your license, so now you don't drive.
I left Philly, so I wouldn't have to drive anymore. This is great.
You left Philly. You don't have to drive in Philly, do you?
You absolutely have to drive in Philly. There's like two subway lines, and they are, it's useless.
The parking there is also crazy.
Yeah.
You know, not to go too far on a tangent, but if you're driving, I'm like, this is going to sound ridiculous, but like, I try to reduce my internal stress level. I try, right? So I don't want to get road raged out. Like, I don't appreciate getting road raged out, right? It's like, if you ever drive with taxi drivers, Nastasia, and, like, you could tell there's two kinds. Those who will have an aneurysm and fall over dead. And
I would rather they be my taxi driver.
Well, no, but then there's the people who are just like, meh.
I don't like that kind. I don't like that kind.
I think that's the only sustainable. See, you don't care whether it's their life is sustainable or not. That's the reason why.
You know the type that stop at yellow lights? I'm like, keep going.
What about the kind that they always hits the accelerator and the brake? Terrible. So you're like.
That's terrible.
Inside the taxi.
That's what it sounds like, too.
Yeah, yeah. Like, those guys are the worst. They're not getting sick because they know when their foot's about to hit the brake.
You know what I hate is when I'm walking and there's a car about to cross through an intersection and it stops and it's trying to wave me through and I'm, like, trying to wave them through. Like, no, you're in the car. Just all you have to do is step on the gas and you're through in 1 second. Like, I'm going to have to walk across this intersection. It's just much more efficient for you to go. Go right,
right, right. Well, but okay, yes,
sorry,
I think that's accurate. But Nastasia, I'm for my taxi driver having a sustainable or Uber driver having a sustainable life. So I would prefer if they could zen out a little bit.
I'd just like to take this moment to encourage anyone that's currently listening live to call in with your gripes on "It Really Grinds My Gear" with Dave.
As a matter of fact, we do have a caller on the line. You want to take the call?
But here's the thing: if you are going to pull out in front of someone who is going the exact like Vision Zero speed limit that we have in New York, the exact speed limit, and you pull out directly in front of them such that they have to slam on the brakes, you are obliged to go the speed limit. You do not pull in front of somebody and then crawl looking for a freaking parking space. True or false?
True.
Okay, caller, you're on the air.
Hey, Dave. This is Mark calling. How are you doing, everybody?
All right, how you doing?
Doing well, then. I'm just stuck at a crossroads here. I do a lot of wood-fired oven cooking.
Oh, yes. You're not literally at a crossroads right now?
I'm standing in the middle of the road right now.
Does that grind your gear?
Let me tell you something.
No, I'm stuck with a recipe I've been trying to work on, and I spin a lot of pies and sear a lot of meats in there, and it comes out really great. But when I get to frying chicken, I've been stuck because I tried to do it like an open, sort of like an air-fried chicken. But obviously, it's burning up so fast. So I tried to do it in a Dutch oven.
Right.
And what I'm getting is like a pre-cooked sous vide chicken, all dark meat. And when you bite into it, it's just perfectly cooked, tastes great. But all the breading comes off in one bite.
Gotcha.
Trying to find a way.
Okay. This is like perfect because this is the argument that Kenji Lopez Alt has all the time, and he's just doing it wrong. First of all, air frying.
Frying.
Right. Here's the thing about frying. There's this group of people, they're evil, and I don't want you to speak to them anymore, who are worried with their frying foods that they're worried about the oil content. Just freaking deal with the oil content and make the sucker taste good. And if you're really worried about it, then eat your freaking poached, skinless chicken breast garbage, right? Frying is God's cooking technique. Yeah, it's delicious. This is the way God was like, I have given you a medium that will not dilute the flavor of your product. I've given you a medium that instead of making something soggy, will make it crunchy. I have made this medium a liquid so that it can surround every nook and cranny of your food. And I've made this medium so that it can get to a high enough temperature to make everything crunchy. I have given you this. Why, if God gives you this, would you mess with it? Do you see what I'm saying? And like air frying is some miserable, miserable freaking attempt to take a breading, spray some puny amount of Pam or other oil garbage on the outside, and then use an impingement oven to make it crunchy. This is
the only reason I approached it that way in the first place, because I didn't know about the safety aspect of putting 4 inches of oil in a Dutch oven with a lid next to an open flame.
Right. Well, that's a good question. And we talk about that one in a second, because I don't know what the lid will do. There is a group of people who believe that putting the lid on is going to drastically increase the temperature and or the pressure. Not true. What is true, though, you could slightly. I've never done the study, so it's interesting. I don't know. As the way frying works is when the product is immersed in the oil, and this is the problem with air frying, too, is that when you're quote-unquote, I won't even want to use it, when you're air-destroying your food, what happens is that locally the oil plus bread coating can get up to a very high temperature, and in other places it doesn't. And that's why you get scorched areas and blonde areas when you're using that kind of a technique, unless you have a very, very fast impingement oven, which you don't, because you're using, like, you know, another one of the great cooking techniques, wood, right? So you're not going to be able to do that, and so you're going to get scorched parts and you're going to get blonde parts. Now, oil obviously doesn't have that, because as the water is boiling out of your product, right, it's one, getting crispy, it's two, like modulating the temperature of the inside of the food to make it lower, and three, it's convecting a bunch of stuff around such that your oil is pretty much within the area of the actual product going to be a relatively uniform temperature. In a large fryer, you know, you have a big pit in the bottom of it called a cold zone, and that cold zone is where all of your breading drops down to so that it doesn't scorch, right? So you're not actually, you don't want an even temperature over the whole kettle, but from the place of heat, which is where the tubes in a tube fryer are up, it's a fairly consistent temperature because of all the convection going on, right? So now, so that's about the frying. Now, the safety with the lid, the question is, I don't know what effect, because you are going to increase the relative humidity in there, right, by having the lid on, but I can see why you would want to have the lid on from a safety perspective because of the sloshing and whatnot, right? And, I mean, I doubt you're going to get enough radiant heat to actually flash fire the oil that quickly, assuming the chicken is frying. As soon as the chicken goes, let's say you were making tortilla chips instead of chickens, right? So the way you make a tortilla chip, if you want to do a good job, is that you put it into relatively high enough temperature oil to boil the water, but low enough temperature such that the outside's not going to go overcooked before you get rid of all the water. Because when you're cooking tortilla chips, the name of the game is complete moisture removal, right? And so, like, if you overfire a tortilla chip, you'll find that the outside browns and the inside still isn't cooked yet, and this is a sad tortilla chip. So you tend not to go super high on your temperature when you're doing tortillas. And tortillas and potato chips are a few of the things that you can actually do a perfect fry from a cold start. Right? Okay. And one where you can overload your oil. If you're not worried about, like, water damage in your oil, which you really shouldn't be over short terms, like, you can overload your oil on things like potato chips and tortilla chips because you actually want the temperature to drop down a bit, right? But once you get to the end of a tortilla chip and you see the bubbling starts to slow down, indicating that you've gotten rid of most of the water, right? I don't know then whether or not, because you're not going to have as much convective force and as much liquid coming off of it, whether at that point the radiant heat from your oven becomes a risk with the top of the oil. I don't know. I've never tested it. Okay? But to your problem on adhesion, when you said you are getting low-temperature cooked chicken, does that mean that you are cooking at low temperature? And this is back to my gripe with Kenji Lopez Alt. Or are you low-temping the chicken yourself?
I take, you know, usually about 8 pieces of leg and thigh at a time, 65°C for about 2 hours. And it's marinated overnight in buttermilk, and then I poach it, and then I dry it. And then I've tried 3 different bread batches with the spices. I've used 00 flour. I've used all-purpose. I've used buckwheat groats. I've tried to use brown rice, and they all come out slightly different and very nice looking and great tasting. Mm. It's just as soon as you bite into it, it all slips and falls right off. It's maddening.
For some reason, when you said buttermilk, I had the Wham song go through my head. Buttermilk instead of Jitterbug, buttermilk. But the so Wham, you know, George Michael, rest in peace, right? Anyway,
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Freedom.
Freedom. Anyway, that's a different one. That's Aretha Franklin. Anyway, but what?
No,
I was going into the different. I was going into the song she sings in the Blues Brothers. Like, when you said freedom, I heard George Michael, and then my mind jumped to Aretha Franklin singing in the Blues Brothers, which is maybe the greatest rock and roll movie of all time. You don't like the Blues Brothers?
I don't think it's the greatest rock and roll movie of all time.
What's the greatest rock and roll movie of all time?
I'll
give you a minute while I talk about this Spinal chicken. Tap. So here's the thing.
Spinal Tap?
Spinal Tap is... Spinal Tap... No, I mean, when I say rock and roll movie, I mean, like, the rock and roll...
Don't count?
The rock and roll in it. Like, the blues, the rock and roll, the R&B in it. I mean, like, do you, like, Stonehenge is an interesting song, right? As good as Ray Charles singing Shake Your Tail Feather? No. 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 Just, it's not. You know, as good as John Lee Hooker doing ha. No, not. Just not. As good as James Brown in the church? No. as good as Aretha Franklin, like, you know, stepping from behind, cooking the four fried chickens and the toasted white bread? No, just not. You know, as Spinal Tap, now we can make an argument over whether Spinal Tap is funnier than the Blues Brothers. This is not an argument that I'm willing to have, because I feel like, you know, you wouldn't ask me to choose between Booker and Dax.
Wouldn't I?
Would not.
Yeah. Anyway, so back to the chicken.
Nastasia totally would.
Nastasia would, because she's a Sophie's Choice kind of a lady. Oh. So the, she's, yeah, Nastasia. I don't
know. Is Booker still gainfully employed?
Yes. Booker, yeah, Nastasia is Booker's employer, and here's the problem. If you're going to employ somebody's son, you have to set some ground rules, because if you've been friends with them for a long time. Yeah.
Right, you don't want them to walk all over
you. Booker's like, can I change my shift? Can I do that? I'm like, she's your freaking boss, Booker. You're not allowed to do that. Anyway, back to the chicken.
Adhesion.
What?
Adhesion.
Adhesion. Chicken adhesion. So first thing I will say on this is buttermilk. Please do an assessment. When you're going to do a long term, are you low temping in the buttermilk or not?
Yes.
Okay. Here's what I will say. If you're going to do a very hard fry on it, it might not be. I'm just going to go point by point, and at the end I will address your problem. The issue with acidic, I actually, when I do my chickens, especially when I'm going to low temp them, I do not use acidic brines. I'll use salt, obviously, because salt adds some protection against overcooking. And I will use sugar to balance the salt so it's not as sharp. I use milk, right? And I don't know why. I've never done the side-by-side. It's just ever since I was, you know, ever since I can remember, I've used milk in my soak. But the reason I don't use buttermilk, I'll use acid if I'm going to do tandoor, right? If I'm going to pound thin and hit hard, or if I'm only going to soak it for a couple of hours and then cook it right away, I'll use acidic. So when I say acidic, like, I'll use yogurt, I'll use lemon juice in a tandoor situation, and I'm pretty much a yogurt, lemon juice kind of a person, or I can do a buttermilk. But I want you to just assess for yourself whether or not the texture of the meat gets too mushy, right? Because what the acid is going to do is break down the fibers of the chicken. It'll make it soft, for sure, right? So if you were having problems with it being like kind of hard and dry, for sure buttermilk is going to make it softer. But just do a side-by-side and test to see whether or not you actually, if you're going to low temp it, right? If you're going to cook it traditionally, this is why buttermilk marinades are so good in traditional fried chicken. So like if you go to somebody's house and their breasts are perpetually dry, they're probably not brining it, and they could probably use some buttermilk because they're overcooking the bejesus out of their chicken breast anyway, right? But if you're going to do low temperature and a fast fry, consider doing like either, I mean, I've never done a water soak, so I can't say that, but consider doing a milk soak instead of a buttermilk and choose whichever one you like better. I'm not here to tell you what's better or worse. I'm here just to tell you the thing. But the answer
Dave,
what?
I've actually, you mentioned on an earlier show that you, when you do low temp fried chicken, you do milk and sugar. So I tried both the buttermilk and the milk, but the results were the same with the breading falling off.
Yeah. I'm just talking about flavor of the inside. Here's what here is my thing about the breading. Here's where I get to the actual reason you called in, however long later the thing is. You must remove the chicken from the bags or from whatever you're putting it in while they are hot. You must put them on racks, put them into a speed rack, and let them dry. Let them flash off all of their moisture and let the outside get tacky before you bread them. After you bread them, they can then sit for as long as you want and can be re-refrigerated. Are you doing that step?
The first step that you mentioned, I actually did 24 hours uncovered on a drying rack because I got so tired of it. I'm like, it's got to be moisture has to be the problem.
You pulled them hot?
So I let them air dry in a refrigerator uncovered for a day. But I did not bread and let the breading sit overnight and become tacky. And that's what a spice rep mentioned to try. But I didn't know what your thoughts were on kind of letting it sit in the breading, you know, becomes moist and then actually like pasty.
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. But and are you're letting the first part, you're letting them flash off when they're hot, right? Don't let the bags cool.
No. As soon as they're done cooking, drain, pat dry with paper towels, in air dry overnight. But then I haven't yet let that – I should, after that first day, then bread and let it become really tacky. I think that – I would like to try that, but I wanted your thoughts.
Yeah, try that. And then also the regimen that I use is I'm So I find it very difficult to properly spice straight flour, right? It's very hard. So typically what I'll do is I do pretty much a straight flour for the dust. You know, if you are worried about it, you can add some of the higher tech starches to it. I never bother, but you can crisp coat or whatever the kids are using these days. And then I always spice the buttermilk egg mixture. So that and I don't know whether or not my lack of adhesion problems have to do with my breading mixture or not. So I'll just tell you what it is. I go into straight flour, and then my buttermilk mixture is it's one egg per cup of buttermilk, right? And then I add both soda. The reason I add soda is it neutralizes the acidity in the buttermilk. There are people on the internets who say things like, it only takes a half teaspoon of baking soda to completely neutralize 2 cups of, but don't listen to these people. Because the fact of the matter is not only do you need to neutralize the acidity, you actually need to push your mixture into the basic realm so that the sucker browns right. If you have a buttermilk mixture and you do not use soda, right? If you use only powder and you only use powder and not soda, it will never brown properly because it's too acidic. All right?
So is it baking powder or baking soda? Because I wrote down baking powder from a previous episode that you had.
Los dos. You must use both. That's the key. So you use soda and you use powder, right? And I got to be honest, I'd love to give you a measurement, but I do it by eye. Food and Wine, like 15 years ago or 16 years ago, printed my recipe. So it's in there, and I bother, you know, look up Dave Arnold Fried Chicken Food and Wine, whatever. That's where I add salt and pepper and spice. If you want to go spicy, I add it all to the buttermilk. So it's in the flour dredge, the straight flour dredge, then into the buttermilk, then back into the flour. That's the regimen that I use.
So it's a double bread, and you have no adhesion problems.
I don't. No, no. Well, depends on what you consider double. I go flour, liquid, flour.
Okay.
And then you can let it sit. Usually, I let it sit for whatever. I do it way early in the day, and then I pull it out and fry it. And the advantage there is, obviously the inside of the chicken's cooked, so all you have to worry about is the outside. I mean, that's the advantage of it. Anyone can, if you're willing to sit there. And, Sean Brock, when Josh Ozersky visited Sean Brock back when he was still alive, Sean Brock did that thing where he would cover the pot and lift the pot to get the moisture just right on the crust. This is why I'm saying I don't really know 100% exactly how the effect of covering it is, but it does change the moisture level in there and probably therefore slightly the temperature. I've never done it. Whether the evaporative cooling off the surface changes, do you actually get that 10, 15 degrees difference by covering, uncovering? Who knows? Not me. So if you want to sit there and adjust it, I used to back before I did low temp, the way I would have to do it is I would fire up my fryer and I would do all the chicken first. I would start the breasts first at the lowest temperature, cook them all through, because I was buying whole chickens, and so I had to cook the breast whether I wanted to or not. And then I would go to the thighs and the leg balls, because I only cook leg balls. I don't cook legs with bones in them, because my family doesn't enjoy that. And then after that, then I would go to fries and rings, jacket. But, now I can just go in any order I want, all around the town. But listen, if you're actually having problems, with the suggestions, getting your adhesion, call back, and then I'll have a mental argument verbal argument with myself, and we'll try to figure it out, because this is the gripe that people like Kenji Lopez-Alt have about it. It's just I've never had a problem. And I cook a lot of fried chicken. I would think that if, they started coming off the hoods of trunks, if it was cars shedding their skin, I would be like, dang, I got to change that. It just hasn't been a problem. I mean, I'm a fairly observant guy. You know what I'm saying?
What would you say about
that's why I asked you.
What would you say about using a Dutch oven with not as much oil, so it's more like a pan fry? So you'd halfway through have to flip it.
What's the advantage of that? Just less oil?
Because less oil, then you'd have to worry about.
Yeah, but
spilling.
He's doing it commercially though.
He's doing it in a wood fire oven.
Yeah, but are you doing it commercially or are you doing it at home?
Well, I'm preparing to open a nano brewery here in Pittsburgh. Ooh, and I have
what's nano?
I have a wood oven in my backyard.
What's nano? What defines nano versus micro? Is it a batch size? Is it a brew size?
It's an order of magnitude.
It's like a three barrel system with probably 8 taps.
But in other words, are you brewing, like, what size vessel are you fermenting in? Are you fermenting, like, in a Sankey keg size fermenter?
It's just a standard 3 barrels. It's a microbrewery. It's just probably a poor buzzword.
No, I like it. I like anything nano, except for, like, well, nano, I mean, it's a good word, nano. Nano. Anyway, I mean, the advantages at home of using less oil are that you use less oil. The disadvantage is commercially is it's going to go bad faster, right? So
commercially, just get a deep fryer.
No, but if he wanted to do it in the wood oven as part of, if the shtick is all the stuff's cooked in the wood oven, including my fried chicken.
Everything's coming out of that oven. And I did try, like, just a regular cast iron skillet and to do the pan fry. But what seemed to happen is the unexposed parts of the chicken we got the leoparding, charring of the certain spots of the flour that weren't submerged.
Yeah. Because you've got radiant heat. See, the reason that works in a stovetop scenario is because you don't have radiant heat hitting from above.
Right.
Here's another thing.
It's kicking up the dome of the oven's probably sitting around 1,200 degrees.
Right.
The floor is probably around 800-900. So
for safety, right, another reason for the lid here, now that you're telling me your temperatures, is the problem is if you ever, like, hung out above a fryer for a long time, which I highly recommend, right?
As one does.
You get covered with a oil mist, right? Because, like, oil gets volatilized. And that's actually going to be the danger. If you locally overheat and you get the stuff into, like, if you were going thin, like, if you're going in a skillet, I think you get a much higher danger of making an oil burst cloud, you know, above the pan, you know what I mean, than if you're doing it your way. So I think covering is definitely the way to go in this scenario.
Also, from a long-term safety perspective, make sure you clean out and maintain your hoods. Between the carbon that's going up there and the oil mist that's going to go up there, you're going to fire.
He's outside.
Yeah, still the same thing. You don't want
to
fire.
No, the oven's inside.
Oh, the oven's inside.
I'm outside, but the oven will be inside and vented directly outside wall.
Can you move the oven to the center of the crossroad?
That's what originally I thought he needed help jacking his oven out of the crossroad because cars were honking for, like, miles behind him. Here's another thing I'll say.
All right,
like,
we gotta take a break in a minute.
Use my words wise.
All right, here's another thing. I mean, obviously, you know this. You're doing this. I think, like, you need your chimney cleaned out or your flue or whatever cleaned out on a regular basis. But I think, you know, a lot of people, because you burn an ungodly amount of wood when you're actually using wood to cook. And I think there's a lot of temptation to use under-seasoned wood because, you know, you haven't planned in advance or the wood's not seasoned enough. And you're obviously going to get a lot. I don't know if you know this, but if you look up the number of BTUs of heat you get per cord of wood, if the wood is not properly seasoned, if you use actual green, which no one does, but actual green wood, like, half of the BTUs are used in heating and vaporizing the water that's in the wood, on the order of half. I mean, it depends. Like, very high BTUs, like, very high BTU wood, like hickory, like, probably not a full half because there's probably the same amount of water in hickory as there is in a crappy wood like birch, which has a much lower BTU per pound than hickory does. But the green wood, you get a much lower use out of it because you're spending all of that energy heating water in the wood. Secondly, you're really gunking up your flue with that stuff, and so you want to make sure that you have, it's worth a little bit more to get wood that's seasoned properly and not from some joker who drops you off stuff that they just chopped this season. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir. Yep.
Yeah, I'm sure you already knew that, but I was just saying that for other people.
No.
Yeah.
Good information.
All right, David.
Well, anyway, let us know how your adhesion problem works, my friend.
Hey, thank you, everybody. I appreciate it.
All right. Talk to you soon. All right. Taking a break. Coming right back with more cooking issues.
Think about about what it takes to swim a coastline longer than the entire eastern seaboard and leap tall waterfalls in a single bound. What does it take to survive 200 feet deep in icy salt water? What would you be made of? Wild Alaska Seafood is made of tight muscle mass, long chain omega-3s, and incredible micronutrients. It matters where your food comes from. Experience the flavor of the fittest in every bite and enjoy food the way nature intended. Alaska Seafood, wild, natural, and sustainable. Ask for Alaska on the menu, grocery store, or smart device. For more information, visit wildalaskaseafood.com.
All right, listen, Dave. With the Wild Alaska Seafood, first of all, eating food the way nature...
Dave, I don't have time to edit all this out later, so let's just skip it.
No, it's important. So Wild Alaska Seafood, so like the way that...
Dave, I don't have time to edit all this out later, so just skip it.
Oh, man. I'm not going to say anything negative about the seafood. First of all, Don wants me to cook him the live Alaskan king crab.
I've never had one live. I've been promised by Dave that it is delicious.
I used to get them from True World Foods. I don't know whether they still get them, but they used to get the Alaskan live king crab.
All right, we got 5 minutes.
What? I'm talking about king crab.
Look at the time.
I'm talking about king crab.
All right, get to it.
What about king? Why do you want to taste Dave's king crab?
It's delicious.
It's just I've never had one live.
Didn't you have one, Nastasia? Or did we cook that before you showed up? Remember we used to, we got the entire...
But like, live? What do you mean live?
They come alive.
Oh. It is moving.
Oh.
In styro.
As opposed to dead.
Yeah, they're fantastically expensive, but they are a boat ton better. We used to get them, Nils and I used to get the live king crab, and then we would do the anesthesia on them with the clove oil. Then we would do...
Oh, I've been there.
Yeah, then we did the kill, and then we would make the soup out of the bodies and serve it in the giant soup, and then we'd have all the legs. It is pretty fantabulous. But here's the thing. Why does no one push the most important Alaskan product, which is Alaskan cabbage? First of all, what's his name, Nastasi? Steve Hubachek, right? Steve Hubachek?
Yes. I wonder if he's still alive.
There's a dentist in Alaska named Steve Hubachek. And as of like 5 or 6 years ago,
no,
I don't
10 years ago.
10 years ago, Nastasia found out who Steve Hubachek was. Steve Hubachek grows the world's largest cabbage. Now, Don, have I talked to you about this before?
No, it's the first time hearing about
it. How big would you think the world's largest cabbage is?
Smaller than a quart of wood?
Well, yeah, a quart of wood is freaking big.
Yeah.
They are like on the order of 150 pounds, right? Steve Hubachek. Find out what the largest cabbage that Steve Hubachek's ever made. Maybe it's only 100 pounds, but they are, as they say en français, freaking big, right? Like, so much so that Nastasia and I, we were like, yo, Steve, because here's what it is.
125.9 pounds.
That's a big cabbage. So we called Steve one day. And we say, hey, Steve, because like everyone goes to the state fair in Alaska with their giant cabbages, right? And they, you know, have a contest, and Steve always wins. So we called him and be like, hey, Steve, I don't want to know the secret of your giant cabbage because, frankly, I'm never going to grow a giant cabbage. It's just not what we're going to do. What I want to do is buy one of your giant cabbages. Like, maybe, like, the second biggest cabbage you have this year, I would like to buy that because you're not going to take it to the state fair. And it seemed like he was going to do it. Like, we were going to get a truck. We were pitching it to television programs, right, Nastasia? Like, for, like, late night and whatnot. The idea is to... Because I said to him, I was like, so, is the cabbage being that big, does it make it taste awful? Does it taste like garbage? He's like, nope, tastes fine. That's right? Isn't that what he said?
Yeah.
Nope, tastes fine. Dentist, this guy. And we were going to truck it, and then he just stopped returning our telephone calls.
But
it's
look
like,
what he did with this last one. He wheeled it up to some bears.
And the bears ate it?
The bears ate it.
I like that. So here's what I want to here's what I want to do. I want to buy a brand new... By the way, chainsaws require oil to oil the bar, to lubricate the bar. This is a well-known fact, true, right? Now, those of you that don't care about the world, you can get like petroleum-based bar oil. I happen to use vegetable-based bar oil with stuff in it that like stops it from breaking down and has like biodegradable tackifier agents to keep it on the bar. But... if you're not going to do it long term, you could probably just use grapeseed oil, right? You get a brand new electric chainsaw with a long bar. You're going to need a long bar for this one, right? And this, Nastassi added this next part, right? We get a, first we take the cabbage, right? And we take the chainsaw and we hack it into coleslaw with the chainsaw. And then you switch over after you've done all your food work, you switch over and then you carve a bowl out of a giant ass Douglas fir stump. And then you eat the chainsaw, like Alaskan chainsaw coleslaw out of the giant tree stump. You in?
I won't say no, but I feel like it's a waste to just chop it down to coleslaw. You got this giant cabbage.
What are you going
to
do?
Like, can't you make the world's largest like cabbage leaf wrap or something? Like,
well, there's enough. We could take some leaves off the outside.
Those,
a whole pig cabbage
rice,
wrap?
No, yeah. Or the rice and meat.
Oh, my God. Nastassi wants to make a stuffed cabbage with ground meat where you grind like whole animals and stick it inside of a single cabbage leaf. Really? That's a lot of tomato sauce.
Deboned, I hope.
Deboned.
It's a lot of tomato sauce. Anyway. If anyone out there is from Alaska and knows Steve Hubachek, please, I'll start pestering Steve again. This is in the fall. The reason Alaskan cabbage grows this way, people, is that cabbage size is dependent mainly on number of hours of daylight, right? Mm. And so they plant it in this, like, what would be fertile but not exhausted because the growing season is typically so short. But because they have those long, long, long hours of daylight starting now, they get these giant freaking cabbages. And I want one real bad. Maybe we can fly there. Maybe the three of us could go fly get one.
You think you could put it on an Amtrak? That's cheaper.
But Amtrak, what are you going to tell them that you're a student and that you got to transport it to your dorm?
Yeah,
isn't that the cheap way?
Anything on an Amtrak.
Anything on an Amtrak.
Even your like dead relative's body.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Well, why'd you go to dead relatives?
Wow. She wouldn't have said that if she hadn't done it.
Because she had to once move a dead body.
No.
Nastassia has not yet realized that the government looks at your search history after you've committed a crime.
No.
These days before.
Yeah.
They're watching.
Yeah.
All right, we got to wrap it up.
All right. Anyway, so I don't know. We were supposed to get to some questions that theoretically I've missed. This is a clean slate.
Not theoretically, you absolutely missed them.
This is a clean slate, people. I don't know what questions I've missed. So if I have not answered your question,
email them to
Nastassia because they have been officially been missed. I have missed them. Email them again. Cooking issues.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.